Greetings, everyone. This is your host, Josh, here. Happy to say that the Trans Natural Perspectives podcast is brought to us by listeners like you. If you find value in this show and you want to help it grow, please consider sharing this podcast, writing a review, and supporting the show. Head on over to transnaturalperspectives.com to learn more about how you can contribute as a monthly subscriber, as a one-time donor, as well as check out our blog. I invite you to contact me with any ideas you have for the show. If you'd like to be a guest, if you need a writer, or any other tips on further funding opportunities. I'd really love to hear from you. It keeps this show going, keeps me going. And with that being said, thanks for listening.
Education is not just being on the trip. For some it may be, but it's also the whole planning, the enactment, the post-trip reflection and assignments and so forth. So when I talk, for example, about to outdoor educators and ask, you know, and they say to me like, no, I don't use any mobile technologies, but they may use certain applications for checking the weather, planning the transportation, checking avalanche risks, like all these kind of other things that mobile technology does come into play. And I think that also still plays a role.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to the Trans Natural Perspectives podcast. This is the show where we put nature in focus while sharing perspectives on society and culture across environments and landscapes. I'm your host, Josh Bennett, recording live here in Oslo, Norway, bringing you conversations with researchers, artists, activists, and all other kinds of people from around the world who are here to share their experiences and efforts, give us some inspiration and some tools that we need so that you and me and we and I and everyone else out there can start working towards a more socially and ecologically sustainable future today. We must attack the issues of social and ecological injustice at large from wherever we may sit and stand. And welcome back, everybody. And I say big welcome back, and maybe if I can say Happy New Year, because this is the first new podcast of the new year. You know, on the last show, I made the classic hopeful podcaster mistake that I would be giving you lots of updates from the road about my interesting journeys. But the truth is, it was kind of a whack-a-mole type situation when I was on the road. And what I mean by that is people were getting COVID left and right. Every time you find a stable location, you'd have to move. And just finding the time in a stable spot to record the podcast was just not that easy. Now, somehow me and my party, we all made it throughout the virus, but yeah, pretty much everywhere we stayed, someone was getting it. We just had to kind of keep cruising around, couch surfing. So anyways, we're back here and it's cold and it was tropical in Florida. And with that comes a lot of transnatural perspectives and, you know, cross-cultural perspectives and observations that I made along the way. I'm not going to go too deep into it, but I can just say, you know, when I was there, you know, it was very surreal sometimes. It's the longest time I've ever spent in the past, over a decade, back in the homeland of the tropics, and especially in the wintertime. And I just said, wow, it would be surreal sometimes to, not trying to brag, but it was a bit surreal sometimes to be, it is January 3rd, and in Oslo, it is covered in ice and snow, and I am here on the beach going swimming, snorkeling, bike riding, all kinds of stuff in my shorts, something that I really appreciate. So I took a lot of advantage of that, just being outside, getting the fresh air, all that friluftsliv that we like to talk about here in Norway. Well, you can do it there too. And that was actually something that, you know, after all this time kind of blew my mind. Sitting there at the ocean one day, you know, looking at the Atlantic Ocean, it's warm, and I see people surfing and paddleboarding and kayaking and jogging on the beach and building sandcastles and all these kinds of things. And I just thought, wow, you know, this is very similar. This is friluftsliv. This is this kind of freedom in the outdoors, under the open sky, all this kind of catchphrase that we hear here in the Scandinavian countries. This is the outdoor culture of this area, this land. And I mean, I always kind of knew this, but it just kind of hit me there in the moment looking out there, because in Norway, we have this concept in Norwegian called the marka, and it's like the forest that sits outside of the city. And if you're here in Oslo and you go through the Oslo marka, you're gonna, you know, find it's just a kind of a paradise of outdoor exploration and activity. You can hike, you can bike, you can ski wherever you want, camp wherever you want, We have these wonderful laws here that preserve a lot of, you know, free movement and mobility rights in the Marka here in Norway, throughout the country and through many of the northern Scandinavian and Baltic countries. So main point is that, you know, I was staring at the ocean. I was like, wow, this is the Marka here. And many times people from Florida will come visit me here in Norway and they'll be on a tour and they'll be like, oh, wow, like the forest is so free. We don't have anything like this here in Florida. And we indeed do have a tremendous forested areas and beautiful nature that is away from the ocean in Florida. But a lot of that is filled with a lot of like creepy crawlies, and it's not so easy to get to, especially with public transportation. So it is not accessible to everyone. But the sea itself, you know, open to everybody. You can kind of go wherever you want, just as long as you get, you know, you can even just swim. You don't even need any equipment. So just, yeah, just, you know, this might seem very obvious to a lot of people. It's very obvious to me now thinking about it. It's just like, wow, that is the Florida Marka right there. That's the Florida Friluftsliv right there. So I'm just curious, you know, let me know what you think. What is your Friluftsliv? What is your outdoor culture? What is your outdoor freedom, place of free movement, place of outdoor goodness and nature connection wherever you live? I'd really love to hear about it. Send me a message. Send me an email. I'd love to hear if you got any cross-cultural or trans-cultural perspectives on that too. Maybe you've lived in different places or been to different places and made similar observations or different ones or whatever. I'd love to hear from you. And, you know, speaking of listener connections, we've, you know, made some really cool listener connections here. Now we're here in our second season of the Transnational Perspectives podcast. And we've even had a few listeners become guests on the show, and we have some more coming up soon. You know who you are. Don't worry, it's coming out soon. And we've also been getting more messages and questions and emails. So, you know, please feel free to send me your questions, and I'm going to think we're getting more, so I'm going to start, you know, reading them on the air. I don't have to read your name if you don't want, but I think a lot of these questions might be helpful. So stick around in the concluding thoughts of the show today, where I'm going to read some a listener question, and we'll discuss that a little bit. And I say we're talking about the royal weed here. It's just me here. This is Josh. Hi, Josh Bennett, host of the Transnational Perspectives podcast, editor, writer, researcher, interviewer, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, as a special message to anyone who might be listening out there right now, I am admittedly not so great at promotion and social media. I know how it works. I understand how it works. I have a degree in media production from when I did my bachelor's degree. I understand all the stuff, but I just find it particularly exhausting. And honestly, I'm just not that into it. Especially when all the many, many, many hours that it takes to make this show is already a lot of time sitting in front of the computer. And I'm sure, you know, if you are an outdoors lover, outdoor person like me, like we are, yeah, sometimes sitting in the front of the computer too long can just make you cranky. So I want the show to grow, though. I want it to grow at best organically. So if you like the show, please, please, please share it around on your various social media platforms, your email list, etc. It is a tremendous help. There's been a few shares that have really helped the listenership on this show. And I feel like I'm kind of attempting to go viral in reverse here. As you see, if you see my minuscule posting contributions that are being spread around, say on Instagram, you know, Twitter, or if you're on the email list, please feel free to share that, copy paste, whatever. If I see it getting passed around, maybe that'll inspire me to start posting a bit more too. I'm gonna try, but like I said, it's just really hit or miss for me. So please, if you can just share this podcast wherever you can, it's tremendously helpful. So I really appreciate that. And hey, also, if you can drop a show review wherever you listen to podcasts, or throw a like up there if you're listening to it on YouTube, 5 stars, wherever you listen to this podcast, that also really, really helps. And you can check out all of your options on how you can support the show at transnaturalpod.com. Now, enough of me, enough of promoing, yada, yada. Let's get on to today's guest. Now, I'm really excited to bring you today's guest. Friend of mine, actually here in Oslo, fellow Norwegian School of Sports Science attendee, Imre van Kralingen, is a PhD candidate in the Department of Teacher Education and Outdoor Life Studies here in Oslo, Norway, at the Norwegian School of Sports Science. And her current research aims to develop accounts of how mobile technology now form a part of contemporary teaching and learning experiences in higher outdoor education in Norway. So particularly talking about higher education. It's very interesting. Imre also has a background in cultural anthropology and development sociology from Utrecht in her homeland of the Netherlands. And she holds a master's degree in development, environment, and cultural change from the University of Oslo, right here in Oslo, Norway. So today we're going to be talking about her research that she's doing over there at the sports college here in Oslo, which particularly focuses on digital technology, mobile technology, and outdoor educational experiences here in Scandinavia and around the world. So we're going to get some good old cross-cultural, trans-cultural comparisons going on too. So I really think you're going to enjoy this. I think you're going to find this actually very practical out there, whether you're an educator or some other type of outdoor practitioner, or maybe just even find it valuable in your own personal life and outdoor practices. Please stick around after the interview because we have some more reflections at the end, and we're going to get to those listener questions. So can't wait to see you on the other side. Sit back, relax, and enjoy, everyone. So we have Imre van Kralingen here in the studio today, who I believe is also in Oslo. Are you also in Oslo today?
I am, yes.
Okay, welcome. And just so, you know, so we can, you know, get into it, get to know you a little bit. And where are you exactly in Oslo today? I'm downtown. Where are you?
I am in the northern part of Oslo, northeast on the edge of Nordmarka, the forest. So, can't complain.
Yeah. In are you at your university right now, or you're doing research, or you're home?
I am doing research, or I am working, but I have home office today, or I took home office today. So I'm currently in the living room, but
yeah. So I think this is actually perfect because, you know, we're here today to talk a lot about your research, and you do a lot of research about digital technology and the outdoors, outdoor education, outdoor recreation, all kinds of stuff like that, which you're going to explain a lot better than me. But it's a perfect setting because, I mean, I think especially last time we talked, we were kind of still deep in the pandemic times, and we still are to a certain extent. But yeah, this is just another added level, I think, of you know, working in the outdoors, researching remotely all the time, and a lot of times not in the outdoors too, but kind of like where you are, kind of on the fringes of the outdoors. So can you just, let's get started just a little bit about where you're from and how you got here to Norway and all that.
Well, I'll try to give that a compact answer. I'm originally from the Netherlands, born and raised, started studying cultural anthropology and development sociology, partly in the Netherlands, partly in Ireland. Was kind of always sure that I wouldn't stay there. So I continued to explore options and opportunities abroad, whether that was a research or an exchange opportunity, tried to really make the most of everything that came my way. So started out in a direction of like youth empowerment, had an initial interest in just education and young people and their personal growth. So I did some research in Bangladesh on youth empowerment and sustainable social change. And I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do afterwards. I considered doing a master's degree, but I was not willing to pursue a degree unless I was highly motivated and interested in it. So I ended up applying for a master's degree in Norway in development, environment, and cultural change at the University of Oslo. But it was quite competitive, and I didn't get in when I applied. So I thought, like, my initial idea was to take a gap year, have a little bit of a break from the academic scene. So I took a gap year and I traveled and did some voluntary work in Uganda and Sri Lanka. And then I was like, okay, well, the next year is coming up. You know, what am I looking for the opportunities ahead? And I was like, okay, this master's degree was still in my mind. I was like, I'll just give it another try and see what happens. So after that, I applied again. And 6 days after I came back from my gap year, I heard that I was accepted. So I was like, okay, I'll pack my bags again and move to Norway. My master's degree here, the moment I set foot here, I'd been in Norway before when I was younger with my family. I absolutely loved the nature. And the moment I arrived, I was like, yeah, I really want to stay here. Enjoyed my master's degree. I really enjoyed Norway and exploring the country. And then I ended up applying for a PhD at the Norwegian School of Sports Sciences at the Friluftsliv Department, outdoor education. And I was lucky enough to get this opportunity, and I'm really excited. It's a great work atmosphere. I have amazing colleagues. I have really inspiring and supportive supervisors. So yeah, I'm just really, really thankful.
Wow. Sounds like you're in an exciting moment right now. And it sounds like it was actually quite a journey to get here to this point. So before we get deep into your research, can you just give us like a bit of a synopsis, or maybe even just like the title of what you're working on right now? Kind of theme here.
Yeah, so what I'm working on is the role and impact of mobile technology in outdoor education in Norway. So here it would be called Friluftsliv education, and specifically higher education. So at the scientific school in Norway or university level.
Okay, so you're actually working on outdoor education, or Friluftsliv education as they call it here in Norway, but on the higher education level.
Yes.
Interesting. Very interesting. That's actually really interesting, because I feel like a lot of research up until this point has been very focused on children. So I'm sure there's lots of other projects in relation to that. Well, just curious, like, are there some like initial questions there that when you're dealing with more adults? Is it affecting adult education in a different way other than children, or how's this working out?
Well, I think definitely both in Norway specifically and internationally, I think outdoor education is very much revolved around outdoor play in general and joy, and kind of this, in the light of the nature deficit disorder, re-engage children, especially those growing up in more urban areas and in today's digitalized worlds, to reconnect them with nature and give them that opportunity to really have explorative play, learn about the local flora and fauna to generally boost people's well-being. But I mean, the same counts for, of course, teenagers, but also young adults. And I think what you're saying is completely correct. As far as I'm in the literature now, there's definitely research done on like preschool teachers, high school students, teenagers, but most of the research does focus on children about under the age of 14, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to kind of complement that with my study as well.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's like, I always do wonder about that. I also kind of wonder, I don't know if this is anything we have an answer for really, but I do wonder if there's a lot more studies done for children, perhaps not just because children are important, but I mean, all people are important, but perhaps it's tends to lean more towards children because of like funding issues. Like there's just a lot of funding for like around the world for like children's activities, but it makes me very happy to hear that you're focusing on big children known as adults, because we're important too. And actually I'm a big advocate, and some of you have listened to this podcast before, about doing more research about adults and adult education and continuing education, just because I feel like these are, yes, children are going to grow up the Greta Thunbergs of the world, and younger than that are going to grow up to hopefully make decisions. But especially when we're talking about things like climate change and sustainability, the people that are in charge right now are actually the people that are, you know, really going to impact what's going on in the next, you know, 10 years while those kids are still growing up. So
for sure.
Wonderful.
That aside, I mean, children, they are really in their formative years of life. Mm-hmm. So it will always remain an important target group, nevertheless.
Always. Yeah. No doubt about it. But it's just good to see a bit more like kind of research going towards like, you know, teenagers and young adults, and even, you know, lifelong learners, as we call them. So when it comes to your research topics, where do you see like Norwegian culture? Because this is a worldwide issue, right? The integration of digital technology into outdoor lifestyle, outdoor recreation, all this kind of stuff. But what specifically about Norway do you see like intersecting with this topic, perhaps in a unique or specific way?
I'm not sure if it has particularly a stronger interconnection with the theme of mm-hmm. using mobile technology outdoors, or specifically in outdoor education, but there might be an even stronger controversy around it terms of that. When I first came to Norway, I was super stoked about learning about friluftsliv and the culture around it and the traditions, and especially about the philosophy. I focused quite a bit on learning on about eco-philosophy and how it kind of became intertwined with the friluftsliv practice and culture. Similarly to outdoor education in other places or outdoor recreation, in Norway, friluftsliv also developed first as a practice. And then it was the practice of going outdoors, exploring nature as a leisure activity. And then later on, there became this focus on skill development. And when the societies or the communities became more modern in a way, it was not a given anymore that people would learn from their parents or their nearby people, friends, communities, the skills to manage oneself in the outdoors. So then the first outdoor education programs developed here. And then when eco-philosophy developed as a revival of romantic ideals and reconnecting to nature, counteracting the distresses of modern society, that became an important part as well of the friluftsliv tradition, which historically it also was when we think about the leisure practices that developed to reconnect and to kind of praise nature and the aesthetics of nature and so forth. So I think in that sense, it has a lot of similarities, but definitely the philosophical foundation of friluftsliv is perhaps what it also makes it stand out compared to outdoor practices internationally. But today, we see more and more use of advanced equipment and technologies in outdoor education and outdoor recreation as well, perhaps mostly. But that is the same as internationally. However, when we look at the philosophical foundation of friluftsliv, there's an even stronger focus on this deep experience of nature, developing this connection to nature, raising environmental awareness. I think this is something that's still very much alive. But simultaneously, we see a change in friluftsliv as well. Like, I don't want to spark any, frustrations from Norwegians here by saying this.
But let's do it.
But as a non-Norwegian, having delved myself into all the aspects of the way it is practiced today, yes, it is an important part of the cultural identity, but it is not different from outdoor recreation international. There's this philosophical foundation, but people are not actively thinking or living that environmental philosophy that is considered intertwined with friluftsliv as a practice, as far as I've seen. And there's more and more written about the commodification, the sportification of friluftsliv in Norway as well. But when people say, I'm practicing friluftsliv and they're out skiing, joining competitions, like it's often more and more high adrenaline activity-based activities rather than really this more slow adventure, really delving into the deep experience, reflecting on the experience and so forth. So I think when we relate that to mobile technology, I don't think there's a difference between how mobile technology is used in friluftsliv compared to the international scene of outdoor recreation practices or outdoor education practices. I think that that is about on the same level. But when I speak to people that have been involved longer in the field or perhaps are a little bit more conservative in that way, I think there may be a higher resistance to acknowledging and addressing the increasing role digital mobile technologies are playing today.
Mm-hmm. This is a really big topic, especially. I know the topic of friluftsliv in general has become more popularized in the past couple of years, and of course, we've done a few episodes on this podcast about it. How would you explain friluftsliv in a sentence or two?
Well, naturally, there's the English translation, like outdoor life. I think it's really the practice of being outdoors, immersing yourself in nature, connecting to nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, friluftsliv is also really important, especially here in Norway, and in perhaps we could argue in some of the other Scandinavian countries, because it really is. Yeah, I think why it's such a big topic is because it's not a lot of people say, hey, I go outside in England, I go outside in North America, I go outside in, you know, wherever. Everybody's going outside around the world. But here it is, I would say, a very connected to the culture, connected to like the national identity and how society itself is designed. It is a cornerstone. It is like a pillar holding up Norwegian society, this being outside, connecting with nature. So to me, it always seemed, and I explored this a bit in the research I did also. Yeah, we both studied at the same school, Norwegian School of Sports Science. A lot of this kind of conflict, especially when almost anything kind of seems to intrude into the sphere of friluftsliv. It could be foreign ideas, new cultures kind of mixing with the traditional culture, or in this case, something like modern technology of some sorts. Because, I think we probably both agree, I think friluftsliv itself kind of originated from this idea of escaping the industry, right? During like romantic times, romantic period, we're talking about the period where people were trying to escape technology or escape like the industrial smoky factories in these European city centers and stuff like that, as they did here. And there was this big push to go back to the nature. So I think in a lot of ways, like you're saying, there's a lot more conservative viewpoints that are saying still kind of carry this idea that going to the nature means leaving, you know, industrialization behind, which might also include a smartphone or something like that.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a reaction to it. It developed as a reaction to the industrialization, right? But I think in Norway it especially strengthened because you had the polar traditions, the polar expeditions, right? So this adventure narrative, partly kind of this masculinity and surviving in the wild with limited equipment and simple means, that's boosted really friluftsliv and the cultural connection to it, I think, in Norway. And with that, the Scandinavian countries have been very progressive in recognizing nature as a source for our mental, emotional, and physical well-being, and thus placing a higher emphasis, not just in the education system, but also in the political system on it, which I only think is fantastic.
Yeah, and you bring up a very interesting point because, yeah, nowadays, I think friluftsliv is kind of getting transmitted around the world. There's been, you know, in the past couple of years, especially during COVID, there's been articles and like The Guardian, newspapers all, oh, you know, the Norwegian tradition of friluftsliv, getting outside and all this stuff. You should embrace this during these, you know, tough times. It's a great thing. But ironically, yeah, I mean, kind of funny enough, even back then when these big polar expeditions were going on, there was technology, very high technology of the time, being used to go on these expeditions to, you know, from everything from, you know, mapping to, you know, whatever they're using to go on these expeditions. A lot of equipment, a lot of different things. They're bringing a lot of the industrialization with them on these high adventure journeys, you know. So I mean, kind of the same thing we could maybe say is happening now. Like the spreading of the gospel of friluftsliv might not be possible without digital technology, hashtag friluftsliv and hashtag hyggeliv and all this kind of stuff that's being popularized now. So what do you think, as somebody who's deep in the research, progressively on the sending the ship forward on this new adventure of the combination of digital technology and outdoor life, where what's the, like, maybe some current, let's start with some controversies. What are some controversies that you have found during your research in the literature, or maybe just like speaking to people, of other than what we've covered so far, of just like conservative traditionalists like not wanting this? What are some controversies that you might have on your mind?
Well, I think the biggest controversy is in the field is the way I think the topic is approached in itself. That when I've been reading the literature and talking with people about it, there's very put black and white, there's two groups of people. There's the people that are open to technology and excited about the possibilities and positive about it, kind of pro-tech, if you will call it that. And then there's the people who's really anti-technology and saying like, no, you know, like it doesn't have a place in outdoor education. And I think that also sparked my main interest in this theme. It's because I don't think technology should be so easily labeled as good or bad. Technologies, there's an American philosopher, he's called Don Idy, and he wrote that technologies are transformational in the sense that they change the quality, the field, and the possibility range of human experience. And I think that's true. I think we should, what I hope to do with my research is to kind of move beyond that easy label of pro-con, the double-edged sword of digital technology, as it's often written about in the literature, and really come to understand it rather than to just briefly touch upon the benefits or the pitfalls. Yes, technology comes with a set of affordances, but in order for us to frame decision-making around this win-loss assessment in using it as pedagogical tools in outdoor education, we need to really unfold these deeper layers of complexity that technologies bring to the field. And I hope that I can, I'll manage to do that in my research, to really also touch upon this technological mediation, which I think is one of the core aspects of this discussion. And I think that's fair. It's fair that a lot of outdoor practitioners, educators, researchers have this concern or this question of, do we surrender some of the most important aspects why we go outdoors in the first place? Will there be a loss of experiential quality? And I think that's a very fair and important question to ask. I think that the ways in which digital and mobile technologies alter perceptions of spatial and temporal relations to the world and to the people around us, which are associated with this broader shift of modern societies as we live in a world that's more and more kind of shaped by interconnection, proximity, changeability, will you say globalization? I think it's just unrealistic to state that the field of outdoor education is not affected by that, or that it should not be affected by that, because it is already affected by that. Some people start to write now about that we live in a post-digital world, one in which digital technologies are already embedded and they're not separate or other anymore. They are already deeply embedded in our everyday lives and in our education system. And I think with COVID, with the COVID situation, which is the time like that COVID came like 2 weeks after I started my research, and it really changed a lot for my project, because when COVID came, it really enhanced a change or a shift that was already happening, but it reinforced it so strongly in the way in which teaching and learning transpire today in the 21st century. And suddenly outdoor educators had to have digital teaching sessions, all the outdoor sessions that usually are all about being outdoors and being an alternate learning setting were not that what they're essentially meant to be. And that, of course, posed a lot of challenges, which again only increased my interest in this. But I think returning back to that one question of, do we surrender the reason why we go outdoors in the first place? I think yes, technology plays a major role in how we, in the 21st century, pursue, even dream, plan, and act outdoor activities, like outdoor leisure activities or outdoor learning activities. Technology plays a role in that, but it's not the only factor that shapes our behavior and our perceptions of outdoor activities. Like, those changes that we see happening of the way people are outdoors are still part of a broader behaviors and perceptions that are situated in our cultural, our political, our social, our economic worlds. And to blame technology for a loss of experiential quality, or blame technology for the negative sides of bringing mobile technology or digital technology outdoors, is to absolve individuals of their actions. And I think that's something that's really important, that technology is not to blame, I think it will be very hard and challenging and perhaps unrealistic to acknowledge that digital mobile technologies are changing the field. It's just that facilitators and educators need to learn how to use it well, when to use, when, why, and how to use it or not use it, to reflect critically on that in order to inform their decision making and the way they bring these pedagogical tools into the field.
Yeah, and so you're arguing that, and I think it's a very valid that, you know, there's no way. I mean, logically, I think we can all say there's no way we're getting out of this. Really, there's no way we're getting away from technology. It's becoming more and more integrated into our lives. Of course, like you said, it's a larger cultural issue. It's not just an issue by any means in the outdoors. You know, we have all kinds of people are addicted to technology. They're addicted to scrolling. You know, forget about enjoying your nature experience. People are, you know, neglecting their hobbies, they're neglecting their families, they're neglecting all kind of their job, you know, by being addicted to technology. So there's definitely an issue there that needs to be handled that spans across all kinds of activities throughout current human existence. But as you say, you know, it's more of an issue of perhaps society or the culture or even like educators and pedagogues kind of adapting to use technology in a more beneficial way, or use it for its strengths. So do you have any examples of how you've seen that done or how you propose that being done? Have you in your research so far?
Oh, well, partly yes, partly no. I think there's no straightforward answer to that. And I think it's a very complex matter. Again, I'm not pro technology. When we talk about lifelong learning and life skills, which are two important parts of education, but also free-lifestyle education or outdoor education, I think there's an opportunity here when we talk about decision making and managing, or more effectively and successfully managing mobile and digital technologies in the outdoors, where when educators are intentional about when, where, and how they use mobile technologies as digital or mobile technologies as pedagogical tools, and also address the challenges connected to that and the discussions and the complexities connected to that with the participants. And in my research case, then the students in higher outdoor education, there is a learning opportunity that this learning, like any other activity, continues beyond the classroom, continues beyond the outdoor classroom, which means that teaching children or students or participants the skills to be engaged in this decision making and reflexively and critically thinking about the impact of mobile technologies also can affect in how they manage these devices and these technologies in their everyday lives. So to answer your question directly, I did my first paper as a systematized review on the use of mobile technologies in outdoor learning. And one of the things that came out of there was, aside from two lists with the affordances, so the benefits and the pitfalls of these technologies that have been found in existing studies, I found also three main considerations for implementing mobile technology. The first one I think is very important and will resonate with a lot of people, which is to mitigate mobile technology or the use of it. Meaning, on the one hand, to minimize the usage, which I think is important for sure, because outdoor education developed as an alternate learning setting and it becomes harder and harder for the field to claim that it's alternate beyond the fact that it happens outdoors when it uses digital and mobile technologies like any other education program. So I think it's important to minimize the usage where it's not serving the pedagogical intentions. Also, of course, to consider and evaluate and then mitigate the negative impacts. So that would be kind of the first step, to be aware of the negative impacts, to minimize use and to mitigate these negative impacts. And then the second one is, I think, actually the most important one, which is intentionality, that the decisions of when, where, and how to use mobile technologies are guided by practices and by principles. So that means that when the decision is made that a mobile technology could serve as a pedagogical tool and that it aligns with the objective of that activity or that learning session or whatever is planned. And also to avoid that the technology is the focus point of that activity so that it's really in service of the activity that's happening. And of course, being reflexive about that is very important. Continuously reflect on what is happening, how is it affecting the situation, talking about it with the participants and the students. How do you experience that? Is it a barrier? Are you having more fun? Is it engaging? And that is what we see with a lot of the studies that have been done on mobile technology in outdoor learning activities is that when it's done with children under the age of 14, a lot of them, I mean, all of them nowadays have grown up in a world that's highly technologically structured or textured. And a lot of these children really enjoy being outdoors with the iPad or a mobile phone. So they get very positive reactions and very positive study outcomes on the use of mobile technology because the children say that it's engaging, it's a lot more fun than being inside the classroom with your mathematics textbook. And all of these things, of course, make very much sense because those children don't a lot of them would perhaps not necessarily think that it's more fun to be outside without the iPad if they can also be on the iPad and play games outside on the iPad. That may differ a lot. So I think that's important to consider. And then the last one, adaptation. So mitigation, intentionality, and then adaptation. So when, where, and how it actually can or should be used. And I think this is the one where there's not really a clear answer to yet. Because there's positive research outcomes done on what works. One very popular activity is like geocaching, applied in many regular school programs, but also outdoor learning programs where children use the GPS to find treasures. They go treasure hunting and they have like interactive prompts that learn about the local environment. And yeah, and they use their technological device to find that information about the environment, but also to find these treasures. And I think that's a really fun and engaging activity. So what really comes out as like the suggestions for adapting mobile technologies is to use interactive, collaborative, and creative strategies of using the mobile technology. Also to, of course, take into account the level of the learners when using these activities. But then the technological competency is important as well, that not all children might be on the same level of using certain devices, as well as what is very important is that teachers are not all able or trained to use mobile devices or mobile technologies as pedagogic tools. And I think that's very important that when this would actually be implemented systematically with pedagogical intentions, technology is changing and developing so rapidly and advancing so rapidly that also educators and practitioners need to be more and more up to date in order to use them effectively in a learning setting in a way that it doesn't distract from the actual learning activity or perhaps more importantly from the actual experience of nature so that the teachers are informed about the impacts and the way in which these tools can serve or cannot serve the learning activity. These are all considerations and it's very complex and it's time consuming and it's also comes with a cost. As well as that I talk from a Norwegian perspective and not all over the world this mobility and portability of devices and access to devices and access to networks. It's not all at the same level as this in Norway. It's not all as accessible. So issues of access and along with that issues of equality, inequality, what children do have access to devices? Are schools going to provide the devices? What costs come with that? And so forth. So there are so many questions and considerations to this, of course, all related to their own particular context as well.
So many questions. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, a big thought that I had when listening to you right now is that, you know, this time and time again, at least in the world of education, but I always thought outdoor education it has a unique position in the world of education because, you know, a lot of outdoor education is used a lot to, excuse me, outdoor education has been used a lot, for example, to work with groups, group dynamics. That's always been a big part, one lane of outdoor education, group dynamics. And, you know, they even do these, you know, corporate events where they send an outdoor specialist and an outdoor educator into, you know, work with the groups and get people to work better together. And one of the things that I found that, you know, what's so wonderful about the outdoors is the outdoors itself is this kind of wall that everyone in a group must confront. And it's a wall that on a greater like macro level, it's this wall that society must confront and then kind of figure out, you know, how to face the wall and perhaps, you know, work with it or climb over it, figure out how to get to the other side. And I mean, to me, it sounds like with technology, special digital mobile technology, it's the same thing. This is another part, you know, in the beginning, you know, as a romanticized answer to industrialization, the outdoors provided a kind of escape from maybe the stress, physical, mental, existential stress, you know, the average working class person was going through at that time, and how to face that stress, how to alleviate that, how to adapt to that. Well, they had to balance it out with, you know, taking long walks on Sunday afternoons and whole societies like we see here in Oslo. Whole societies would build, you know, train lines to send the people from the city out to the forest so they could go get fresh air. So there's all kinds of adaptations that we're making throughout society. And a lot of the times this is answered by somehow, some way, the outdoors. So in a way, I mean, it also sounds to me like there needs to be, we can use a lot of the same tools like pedagogical theories and whatnot that we have used in the past or up until now in meeting, you know, dealing with change and in answering to adversity and working with things like integration, you know, cultural integration, societal integration, technological integration. It's just another tool, another aspect of society. So, yeah, to me, it sounds like actually, although a lot of the time technology and nature or outdoors seems to be in great juxtaposition towards one another, I feel like actually the outdoors in natural areas provide a really great way to kind of be up to the challenge to work on this integration. And actually, you know, what more, you know, a lot of parents probably out there, a lot of people in general say, oh, you know, I can't get my kid off the iPad. My kid's just on the couch all the time on the iPad, you know? So that's a challenging situation. But if you bring that into the outdoor situation, you have a teacher or some leader, or some facilitator there, how are they going to deal with that? There's actually sounds to me like there's a lot to be learned from that situation that you could bring back into your daily life. Yeah. Like you mentioned with the ideas of intentionality and then adapting, you know, how are we using things? If we can figure out how to intentionally use these things in the outdoors, then we can probably figure out how to take that lesson back into daily life, which is the goal of a lot of outdoor educational programs in general. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's one of the important things. And there's, I think, two things I would like to say about that. And one of them is what we both just addressed, the thing of what we learn in class, in the outdoor classroom, we want that to transfer and translate into everyday life and to continue after education, to continue beyond the classroom. I think there's a big lesson for the way we manage technology in that sense. When we consider the use of mobile technology solely as in, yeah, but, you know, we don't want to use mobile technologies in our teaching. And then after students are finished with their outdoor education, how likely is it that they will go on trips or be guides and bring their mobile technology, but not actually have a lot of knowledge and are not very informed of what the risks are, what the challenges are, and how to manage these? I think we should continue that thinking of like, okay, how do we do it? How do we deal with it in the classroom? But whoever we have in the outdoor classroom, how will they continue this afterwards? And will digital mobile technologies play a role in that? I think that's an important question. When I think about, I have a background as a yoga teacher as well. And what I've seen a lot in yoga retreats I've been a part of is that people consistently say, like, you know, I'm learning all these things, I have all these reflections and all these insights, but after I've been home, you know, I try to incorporate that for a week and then I lose it again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a risk when, you know, when you have this beautiful trip outdoors without technology, it still remains hard to live it off the yoga mat. It still remains hard to integrate that and uphold that in our everyday lives. And that's why I think it's important that we learn to manage it. And that does not mean always use it and always integrate it. I think for me, that means that we make informed decisions also about not using it, but that that's an informed decision. Okay, you know, today or this week or this whole trip, there's not going to be any technology. And then another trip, it's going to be a purposeful use of a technology device or an application. And one thing I think is very effective, especially with children, is photo elicitation. So to use photos and also for students or participants to reflect on these images, to reflect on the experience of being outdoors with the camera. Perhaps they even were more focused on details in the nature. One of my supervisors, Simon Beams, he has developed this application. It's called Outdoor Journeys. And the children go out and take photos and then ask a question that they find answers to. So it can be, what type of tree is this? Or what type of birds are like to live in this birch tree? Or all these kind of things that they use for educative purposes that they go and study and find answers to later. And I think more and more of these kind of approaches will develop. Again, seeing the potential in mobile technologies as learning tools doesn't mean we always have to use it, as well as that we should consider when outdoor education begins and when it starts or when it ends. So outdoor education is not just being on the trip. For some it may be, but it's also the whole planning, the enactment, the post-trip reflection and assignments and so forth. So when I talk, for example, about to outdoor educators and ask, you know, and they say to me, like, no, I don't use any mobile technologies, but they may use certain applications for checking the weather, planning the transportation, checking avalanche risks, like all these kind of other things that mobile technology does come into play. And I think that also still plays a role.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think find me one, you know, a handful of people that don't use some kind of digital technology to, at least plan their trip during their trip or after their trip. I mean, we can't, you know, forget that there's a lot of benefits to having that technology too, especially when you're on a trip, especially for safety. I mean, it's changed the world of safety and planning and all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I am the kind of person that I would love to always be able to just like find some place, you know, with my nose, you know, like, you know, on a journey. But I mean, it's a crazy, like having a maps tool in your pocket is a crazy valuable tool to have and can save you time. It can prevent you getting into dangerous situations, especially when it comes to weather and stuff like that. And I mean, yeah, there's a lot to be said for, you know, understanding, you know, what the clouds look like and the patterns and like where you're supposed to go here and there. And there's a way to kind of, you know, balance these things out to improve your situation rather than deter from it. And I think you mentioned before, it all goes back to that kind of intentionality. And I think the truth is, you know, we still are really just like at the beginning of all of this stuff. I mean, the smartphone came out what, back in 2007 or something? So I mean, we're very early on, especially when it comes to research, especially when it comes to funding and all this kind of stuff, very early on in the research, especially in regards to like education and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of research and how to make these things, and then they just throw them out to the public. And then we're here trying to pick up the pieces for ages.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, we can't deny the challenges connected to it. What you say, yes, you know, technology has made the outdoors safer in many different ways. But yet there's also a technology-driven false safety, right? So I think we all have experienced a moment where our battery died, or the phone got wet, or lost it, or it was too cold, or all this kind of things can happen when technology fails us. And then if you are tempted by technology to go to places where you don't have the skills to actually be in, and your technology fails you, you know, life-threatening situations can occur. So the development of skills and all these core aspects of outdoor education remain very important as well. So I think, indeed, there's not just two sides. It's not just a pro and a con. It's not just benefits and pitfalls. There's a whole realm in between and many layers of complexity that should be considered for sure.
Yeah, it's really tricky, actually. Yeah, because technology is definitely not... We're not perfect. Technology is not perfect. Accidents happen. Batteries run out. People get tired. All kinds of stuff happens. So what's the status of your project? And like, are you out in the field yet? Or are you going out in the field? Do you have subjects that you're researching? Where is this going?
Currently, I just got my application to NSDED, the research institute, approved. So I can start my fieldwork and start interviews. So that will be happening very, very soon. Other than that, I've been writing my first paper should be published any moment now, so that's exciting. And I'm also writing a second paper, which is on post-feminology. It's a philosophy of technological mediation, which I'm exploring to hope to get a better understanding of how the technologies actually can mediate, or the different mediating impacts mobile technologies can have on the actual experience of nature. So the ways they can enhance our perceptual abilities, the way they function as background relations, so they affect our actions and our choices during a trip whilst not actually being active in use. Just the idea of having them with us can already change our behavior and our choices. So different levels of this mediation I'm exploring as like a theoretical framework for hopefully getting a better understanding of that. So that is what is happening currently. And I think one thing I'm super interested in, but what I'm not focusing in my research, but what I think is very important in this topic, is also social media. Unfortunately, you know, like it's so hard with a PhD, but with any research project, there's so many aspects to it, but you know, you have to kind of maintain one focus to get a really in-depth insight in that. But when we talk about mobile technologies, I have a friend, another PhD student who focuses on that, and it's a very important part of the narrative around outdoor education and mobile and digital technology, of course, and how it changes what you said in the beginning, the whole idea of Frilifliv, how it spreads across the world, the hashtags, the outdoor experiences. Yeah, what actual is considered as Frilifliv? What is real Frilifliv? What is real outdoor and adventure education? I think there's so much to uncover there too.
So much to uncover. Yeah. And I think I feel like you're in the middle of it right now. So I'm excited to see what you end up finding out. Just curious, like, so you said you just applied to start doing this, doing your research through the NSD. Are you able to reveal like who or what situations are you going to be doing your research in?
I'm not sure the extent to which I can state details, but I'm going to be focusing on both educators and learners. So I'm going to do it. It will be a qualitative study. So I really will try to get a in-depth insight in the perceptions and experiences of both the educators, the practitioners, and as well as the learners in or at higher outdoor education institutions.
Amazing. Wow. Okay. I'm excited to hear more about this on a future podcast.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, before I let you go today, I just had a few other questions. I know that you're doing your PhD at the Norwegian School of Sports Science, and I seem to remember you also have another project going on. I might butcher the name, but it was something like International Outdoor Learning Platform. Is that right?
Yeah, Outdoor Studies Platform. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is in line with all this digital outdoor research. So can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so last year we established the Outdoor Studies platform as like a knowledge exchange project for everyone in the field of outdoor learning, adventure education, environmental education, and of course anyone who's just generally interested in it. And we're doing occasional episodes, different topics related to it. We recently had an international webinar on digital technology and outdoor education, which was, it went above our expectations with how much we got out of that. There were 72 international people from literally all over the world. It was really focused on having the audience engaged in our discussions. So we only posed like two controversial questions that me and two other PhD students who are working on the same theme gave an initial perspective on, and then we engaged with the audience. So we're actually considering perhaps writing something about the outcomes of the webinar, because it was such rich discussions that we were having, and so interesting to hear that it's really a big topic in the field, and people are really interested in being more engaged and getting more or tapping more into these discussions around digital and mobile technologies. Yeah. So,
right on.
Yeah. So that was very good. So I don't know when we haven't planned the next episode yet, but yeah, it's so far it's going well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, no, I that's what I was wondering. Are there more episodes or webinars coming up, and people can access that somewhere, or somehow find out about that more when it's coming out? Because it's really interesting.
Yeah, the recordings of the past episodes are on the webpage, Outdoor Studies Forum, at the website of the Norwegian School of Sports Sciences. And I can drop you the link if you want to post it under the podcast.
Yeah, I'll try to drop a link for that, as well as some of the papers that you have, or blogs that you've released so far. Anybody wants to read that and kind of keep up with your work. Yeah, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us today. Is there anything else you'd like to say, or any links or anything you want to spread out there before we call it a day here? Until next time.
Well, no, I just want to thank you for this opportunity, and for also sharing your own perspective and for your great questions. I think you have a great platform here, and you address so many topics that I'm happy that you created some space for this topic as well. So thank you very much.
All right, everybody, and we're back. Thank you so much for sticking around. Thanks for listening. And I really hope you enjoyed this episode, this interview with Imre van Kralingen. Thank you so much, Imre, for coming on the show. And, you know, it really was striking me time and time again when I was, you know, editing this episode, thinking, man, what a hot topic this really is. What a controversial topic, and what a good topic to talk about, how helpful it could be to stir up more conversation about this, especially in the world of outdoor education, outdoor activity, the outdoor world in general. And, you know, especially in this kind of frame that Imre described while we were talking, I tried to kind of boil it down into a few little nuggets that I took away from the conversation, which was this kind of idea of inevitability, intentionality, adaptability, and integration. You know, it's inevitable, especially as time goes on, is we're now, my generation, millennial generation, we grew up partly with, you know, mobile technology and partly without, like, early enough, especially through early childhood, able to, you know what life used to be like without phones. But it came into our lives, you know, in high school, and then smartphones and all that. So it's kind of been 50-50. But as generations continue on, I mean, it's just nothing but mobile technology from the get-go. So it is inevitable that this is a part of people's lives, is a part of people's realities. And we need to figure out how to integrate this into outdoor education activities and whatnot. Like Imre said, not all the time. We must do it intentionally. We must kind of have a mission, have a plan, have a, you know, work that into your lesson plan, work that into your protocol, use it as a tool. I know that I myself, I've done some really amazing activities, particularly with the cameras on smartphones outdoors,
doing this, you know, photo elicitation, scavenger hunts, searching for certain things. Particularly a really amazing project I did one time with my social studies classes was about juxtaposition and finding juxtaposition instances in their place, in their local environment, where humans and nature were kind of colliding. You know, a lot of interesting pictures come out of that type of project. Anyways, thank you so much, Imre, for coming on and sharing this, your research with us. And I'm going to leave a bunch of links in the description of Imre's articles, blogs, and the OSF, the Outdoor Studies Forum that Imre leads at the Norwegian School of Sports Science. And you can also find that online. It's available internationally. And now, as promised, we have a listener question. And listen here now. I want more questions. I hope we get more questions in the future. I'm not claiming to be any kind of guru on this stuff. I'm just sharing my own thoughts, questions people send here, putting it out there to stimulate more ideas, more discussion, more thoughts out here in the community. And I hope to get more questions from you, or maybe answers to these questions from you. Just get more feedback and stir the pot. So consider these seeds for sprouting. So this question comes from Matt, a PE teacher and coach in the United States. Matt says, "Hi, I am a high school PE teacher and coach in the USA. I just started listening to your podcast. Love it." Thanks, Matt. "And I would love to get some more ideas about how I can get my students connected to nature on a daily basis. Any help would be greatly appreciated." Now, I mean, I think that this is, you know, a common question on almost anybody's mind that's an educator and loves the outdoors, or perhaps in your office, perhaps wherever you may be, maybe just in your own personal life, trying to integrate the outdoors more into your daily practice, whatever your daily practice may be. So first thing that comes to my mind is keep it place-based. Start locally, and I mean really locally. I mean in what's right outside your classroom, what's right outside your house, your office, whatever. Look around and see what you can do in your local environment. Use it as a way to not only get outside, but to get to know your place, to get to know your community, your environment. You know, I'm recalling a story. I believe I was talking with Mike Brown, who some of you may know, great researcher, great author and professor from New Zealand. And the class, and I had him in some of my classes. He told me a story. He said they had a lot of classes that were going, they were located by the coast, and they had were taking their classes like 6 hours away inland to go whitewater rafting every year on these, you know, excursions. Something totally unrelated to their local environment. And at some point it dawned on these educators to start a local surf program instead as part of their outdoor education programs. I'm very much paraphrasing the story right now, but I think you get the point. So it just kind of was like, at the time, surfing wasn't kind of in that general traditional severe sphere of outdoor education, you know, like typical activities that come to mind, like rock climbing, whitewater rafting, high ropes courses. This was kind of, you know, this is like very stereotypical, like outdoor ed kind of activities. But they said, why don't we just integrate surfing? This is right here. Our school is right here on the coast. All it took was shifting the paradigm and looking to what was right there in their local community to open up the door to a whole bunch of new opportunities. Very accessible, you know, it's just right there. Not a lot of equipment needed. Maybe a surfboard. Maybe you can rent. Maybe you can share. But just think about these things that are just local, accessible, low impact, low, you know, don't need a lot of money, don't need a lot of equipment, just things that you can do nearby. Something I can relate to, you know, is we kind of did the same thing when I was in Scouts in Florida. We raised, you know, we'd have these spaghetti dinners and barbecues and raise all this money all over the whole year, so we can blow it all on driving up 18 hours up to Tennessee to barrel down some rivers for like 3 hours, you know, and go to camp. The point is that I don't remember ever going to any local rivers in Florida. And I didn't even realize much. I didn't realize we had hundreds and hundreds of rivers right here in Florida, like right around the corner in the Everglades, beautiful springs, and that this was actually a thing, like kayaking in Florida is actually a thing. I didn't really explore that, ironically, until I got, many years after the Scouts, when I actually got a driver's license, started driving around Florida and said, hey, wow, so much amazing nature right here. And I mean, really not far away at all. There's no need to go far. And just to say, that was any of my Scout friends, that was a lovely time, fantastic, fun memories. But really, why didn't we go to the Rainbow River? What's going on? So yeah, no need to go far. And there's always an adventure around the corner. Another fun example, that when I was doing my master's program, we were in Marburg, Germany. I was doing the transcultural outdoor, European outdoor studies program, the TOS program, which some of you are familiar with. And we had a class called Adventure Around the Corner, and it was amazing. And we would, we had the whole modules where we would, do scavenger hunts in the city. And, I've been living in the city for 3 years, and we went places that I'd never been before, buildings I didn't know about, little corners, little quarters of the city and whatnot. We'd do like team building exercises where we'd have to cross the river, but it's just our tiny little river that we have in town, but that you still got the point across. You had adventure, you had to, learn some technical skills about tying knots and group skills like trust and teamwork and all these kinds of things just on our tiny little river. We could have gone to the Alps, we could have gone to the bigger rivers in Germany, but we just did in our town. The list goes on. I even run some great place-based outdoor workshops in places like the concrete jungle of Berlin in the dead of winter. It really can be done anywhere. So that's really the point. Just know your place, or get to know your place, and you can even make knowing your place or getting to know your place part of your outdoor activity with your class or whoever you're dealing with, whatever groups you're dealing with. There's always going to be something there to find. And, we can reflect a little bit more on, what we talked about with Imna in the interview about this idea of intentionally integrating. So in the case of your PE classes, Matt, it might be as easy as moving a lesson or an activity outside. It could be that simple. We play volleyball indoors. We did that in Florida, playing volleyball indoors. Not exactly sure why. We can go do that outside. Or there might be, if you investigate your place a little bit, your local area, and really maybe the schoolyard or something, the forest behind the school, little places, looks and crannies you maybe haven't thought about before, you might find a lot of affordances of these places, a lot of opportunity there, and this might inspire new activities. And specifically related to mobile technology, there's many ways, as I kind of referenced a little bit before, where you can do some successful activities with the mobile technology. Like I said, taking photos and using photo elicitation in a variety of different ways. I could go on with a number of specific examples, but I'm not going to tire us. Maybe we can do that in a whole episode at some point, or pick up little nuggets from other educators that we interview here on the podcast. But I can really give you a specific recommendation for a journal / magazine. It's kind of like a hybrid, called Pathways, which is put out by the Ontario Journal of Outdoor Education. It's an entire archive, is actually available online. I think it's been around for, 25 years or so. And they have a section in the back of each issue called Back Pocket. And I have found that this section is really inspiring for all types of classes. There's just little like one-page articles, almost something you could inject into a lesson plan of activities, outdoor activities that are kind of unique, kind of a little different. Probably a lot of stuff maybe you thought of or maybe you never thought of before, but I know I've gotten some really great stuff from there. It's really inspirational. I love Pathways. And I've been also lucky to write for them. And big shout out to a friend of the show, Bob Henderson, who's been an editor over there for many years. So I'll drop a link for that as well in the description. Now, I want to thank everybody for listening, and I hope you all enjoyed it very much today. It feels really great to be back, and I hope that we can all continue to grow here together and grow on this podcast and help it grow. I'm going to do my part over here, and if you can help me out by sharing and subscribing to this podcast wherever you listen and wherever you share things, give me a fabulous review and on wherever you listen. And if you want to learn about more ways you can get involved and support the podcast, you can just head right on over to transnaturalpod.com. Transnaturalpod.com. In any event, until next time, everyone, get outside and get some perspective.
Greetings, everyone. This is your host, Josh, here. Happy to say that the Trans Natural Perspectives podcast is brought to us by listeners like you. If you find value in this show and you want to help it grow, please consider sharing this podcast, writing a review, and supporting the show. Head on over to transnaturalperspectives.com to learn more about how you can contribute as a monthly subscriber, as a one-time donor, as well as check out our blog. I invite you to contact me with any ideas you have for the show, if you'd like to be a guest, if you need a writer, or any other tips on further funding opportunities. I'd really love to hear from you. It keeps this show going, keeps me going. And with that being said, thanks for listening.